The views and opinions expressed in the Humanizing the Headset podcast are those of the authors, guests, and hosts of the podcast, and do not necessarily reflect the opinion or position of Humanizing the Headset as a whole. This podcast may contain adult language and adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode for the Humanizing the Headset podcast. I am Brendan, and I am joined by HTH members Kaylee and Janelle for episode 26. Our special guests today are Shannon Price, EMP and director of Sugarland Public Safety Dispatch in Texas, and Amy Patan, operations manager for the same agency. Welcome, ladies, everyone. How is everyone today?
Hello. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
So we were speaking a little bit earlier and talking about what brings you guys on today. I was fortunate to take a leadership training class with Joe Cirio. It was a 6-month training program that met once a month. And in terms of agencies who are doing things right, Joe could not stop raving about your agency. So naturally, I had to have you guys on so that we could hear your story. From what I've seen on Facebook. Oh, and Amy also runs the Leaders Under the Headset Facebook page, which I follow and constantly steal memes from. That's a great page. awesome. So yeah, so we're just going to talk again organically about how you guys came to be where you are today. So let's start. Shannon, you're the director. How long have you been with the agency?
15 years.
15 years. And how about you, Amy?
I just hit my 10-year mark.
Oh, nice. Awesome. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So let's talk about how things were, Shannon, when you started.
So I came in from the outside. I did not grow up here in Sugarland. I dispatched for other agencies. So first red flag is probably, why didn't anybody want the director position, right? Kind of that seems like there's maybe some dysfunction in the department. So I came in thinking, man, these guys are gonna get me because I get them and I was a dispatcher and I totally get what they're going through and I'm gonna have this place like tip top shape, you know, give me a year, 2 years max. And it didn't really work out that way. It worked out that way.
How long had the position been open?
It had been vacant before me for about 4 months.
Okay.
And so basically there were 5 shift supervisors and they were kind of running the show. And of course the stronger personalities, you know, were rising to the top and, you know, kind of doing what they wanted to do. And so I quickly came in and, you know, tried to put an end to that, like, because I am a rule follower. I think there are rules for a reason. I was trying to put a structure. You know, everybody gets the same thing, right? You don't get more because of your title. You don't get to bend the rules because of your title. So pretty quickly, I was faced with having to terminate one of the shift supervisors. And that was honestly really scary. You know, sure. This is my first time being a leader in the dispatch center at this level. And I was like, okay, am I doing the right thing? Because this is really scary. But I knew I was doing the right thing. I knew, you know, it was the right thing for the organization. But, you know, did I face some backlash? Of course I did, you know. And within a couple of years, my turnover was just stupid. I was like afraid to walk into my office because there'd be a letter on my desk.
Oh, wow. And how many full-time TCs do you have?
Okay. So when I first started, there were 19.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think at one point I was probably down to 11.
Oh,
and
wow.
I thought at what point are they going to think it's me and fire me?
Right.
And luckily that didn't happen. And you know, we worked through it, but, I started with restructuring. Like, it can't be me over 5 shift supervisors because I just can't be in that many places at a time. So I ended up having a, I was a manager at the time. So I ended up having a deputy manager underneath me, and I was promoting from, you know, within the ranks, and these people were really new to the organization because nobody who had been there for any amount of time wanted it, you know?
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
So promoting new people, and then some people are quitting because I promoted these new people. And I'm like, well, it's not like I have a whole bunch of, you know, choice, and they seem fine to me. Hell, they'd only been there for 6 months. Of course they seem fine. They made it through training, right? So, and it was a struggle because I'm the kind of person that thinks, well, why wouldn't you want to come here and do the very best job you can do and do the right thing? And I truly was naive, you know. I had people in key positions that were really self-serving and kind of hold the wool over my eyes, you know.
Yeah, sure.
And it's funny because one who was just one of the biggest offenders used to tell me, "You're too trusting." Well, I should have just listened to her, right? Like, okay, what are you doing? What are you doing? So yeah, it was a struggle. By the time Amy came to work for me, I had four shift supervisor positions, and I had 3 openings.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that was Amy's first red flag, but luckily she jumped on in anyway.
And Amy, did you come from somewhere with prior experience, or was this all brand new to you?
No, I came here with 6 years of experience, but no leadership experience.
Okay.
So I was hired on as a shift supervisor. And whenever I didn't apply for the job, right. I actually, she was on an interview board of mine. When I applied for Missouri City Dispatch. So she was on my interview board and I didn't get chosen for that position. And then all of a sudden one weekend I'm on vacation with my family and I get a voicemail. And she's like, you know, I'm Shannon from Sugarland Dispatch. And I'm like, I didn't apply for Sugarland Dispatch. So she actually found me and pulled me in. But yeah, whenever I got hired, my husband was like, why are there 3 shift supervisor positions available and nobody from internal is applying for them? I found out really quickly why.
I can see from your smiling while Shannon's talking that you have some interesting stories too.
There, a lot happened, and I honestly I can't believe that I'm here still. I can't believe that I actually stayed through all of the shit that happened here.
Yeah.
It was brutal. It really was.
I bet. So are you guys a union organization?
No, we're not.
No? Okay. Because I when you said that you had to let a supervisor go, because I'm a union organization, so my thought process was instantly like, wow, what kind of red tape did you have to go through in order for that to happen? So for this person that you, the supervisor that you had to terminate then, was it like a mix of, was it performance based or was it attitude based or a mix of all of that? Or,
well, it was really just flat out going against my directives.
Okay.
You know, kind of like, oh, well, yeah, I know she said this, but this is the way I've been doing it, so I'm going to keep on doing it, you know?
Right. And prior to you coming in, did you guys have like SOPs, standard operating procedures, or were you kind of like building that from the ground up when you started?
We had them, but they were old and they just weren't, they weren't complete.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I was kind of building some things up, you know, basically coming to behavior of, you know, in a leadership role, this is how you need to behave. And that is what we were having issues with.
Okay.
So that person, you know, right up front, I was able to very quickly go, okay, you absolutely are defying what I'm telling you. And, you know, there was a lot of red tape, but, you know,
sure.
I was able to do it. Now, the problems I had when Amy got here, it was a lot more subtle. It wasn't like overtly I'm breaking the rules. It was, yeah, I'm bending the rules. I'm breaking the rules, but I'm telling Shannon something different. Mm. And like I said, you know, I put trust into the people that were supposed to have my back, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
And what I've been saying since then is like, okay, you've got a gut instinct that something is wrong. I'm running off good people. I'm not able to hire from within. People who I'm hiring are leaving in these supervisory roles. Like, your gut's telling you there's something wrong with the people that are staying in these supervisory roles. Listen to it. And I didn't right. listen to it. You know, it wasn't until I was really faced with absolute, oh, this is what's happening. Like, oh my God, you know, how could I've let this go on? But thank God, you know, that person did come to me and let me know what was going on.
Right.
So I could take action, but right. I won't ever do that again. ever do that again. if it stinks, there's a reason. You know?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So in the interim, the 5-year gap that we have from when you started to when Amy started, what kind of things were you doing to start that change, or was it further along in the process that you were finally able to? Because I know with the issues with staffing, it kind of hinders what you're able to do and how quickly that you're able to do it.
Yeah. So I was making efforts. I don't think that they were as successful as they were later on, because I just didn't have the right people on my team. So I had some infighting in my supervisory team, and I went to my boss and said, you know, something, I need help with this. You know, this is not something I'm able to fix myself. Just sitting in a room with the two of them didn't work. And so I enlisted the help of like a leadership consultant, which was huge for a dispatch center. How many dispatch centers can go and get the support of their upper management that I need you to invest in right. my leadership in this environment, because otherwise I'm not going to have leadership in this environment. And so I did start doing that and trying to develop leaders, and it worked to some extent. But like I said, there were two key individuals who were just, they could play the game, and they could rise to a certain level, and then they just fell off, but they were really good at covering their tracks.
Sure. So
I was trying to, you know, send the right message and instill the right values. I didn't have the right people on my team.
Gotcha. Okay. So this leadership consultant, how did that come to be? How did that work?
Well, it came to be like, you know, doing a contract with a leadership consultant that is known for working with municipalities. A lot of time would work with like upper management in cities. And again, I just say that's a testament to, you know, this city, is that they said, hey, we're going to invest in your leadership team with this consultant. Because he wasn't cheap, I will say that, but he was good. And basically it was, he would lead us through, you know, exercises, and sometimes it just felt like it was group therapy.
Yeah. You know? Oh, I bet.
So I think that, you know, Amy probably hated we going hated to those it. In the beginning, oh you know, hated it, but now she loves it. She's well, like, yeah. That's the greatest. That's what we need to do.
Totally.
So it was painful. It was painful because it's really about getting open and honest with each other and addressing the issues
right.
that are underlying, not just, you know, glossing things over and letting things fester, but really addressing the issues.
Sure.
It was so painful with those two that were there, because I have to be raw, and I know that whatever I say is not going to stay in this room.
Of course.
That's why it was so difficult. Like, yes, I can be raw and I can be vulnerable, but I don't trust all the people that are in this room. So that was very difficult. And that's
sure.
why hated going to those meetings, because I mean, we would pull up, we had them at the airport, and we'd pull up to the airport and we're like, oh my God, like, I don't want to do this. And then I had those meetings at the beginning of my shift. So then I would have to go back to work after, you know, shedding tears and, you know, being raw and vulnerable. And it's like, okay, now you got a 12-hour shift to work.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. But towards the end, like when we started, when those people were weeding out those people, we loved the meetings. Like we looked forward to the meetings.
Good. So these meetings were for leadership and for the frontline TCs as well?
No, they were for leadership.
Okay.
Really trying to get that team on the same page.
So I gotcha. Okay.
Lead the TCs. We did extend them to our dispatcher twos, which are trainers, at some point to, you know, try to develop their leadership as well. But really the focus was getting the supervisory team together.
Okay.
Know, functioning as a unit rather than undermining each other.
Sure. Gotcha. Okay. So how long was that process with the consultant?
Years.
Years. Okay.
Yeah. Nothing is fast about
right.
it.
Right. Of course. And it's, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The truth is that this process ends up weeding out the people that aren't that their heart's not really in the right place.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not a one and done thing. We've done it again. You know, you bring somebody new onto your team and the dynamics change.
Yeah. And it can be a lot. Yeah.
As much as you want to say, okay, everything's going to, you know, remain the same and still be good. No, dynamics change. So you have to, you know, make sure that you are acclimating them to the environment, the culture that you want for your team. So we've done it more than once. There's, you know, he's on speed dial.
That's awesome that you have the support of your administration. Was there ever a time, given the time frame that this took, was there ever a time that you were worried about that support? Like if they were going to withdraw or if things were going to change in that regard?
No, never. Because we were seeing little wins along the way.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, did it take much longer than it should have for me to recognize what was really the problem and get rid of it? Yeah. But we were still seeing small improvements along the way in other areas.
Good. Okay. What would you say within your leadership, what would you say was the biggest hurdle to go through for change?
I think it was trust. I think it was getting the leaders to trust one another. You know, like I said, I'm a sucker. Like, I'm like, I trust you until you give me a reason not to.
Right.
But not everybody's that way. You know, people don't often extend trust in the beginning, and I do, but I had to realize, hey, not everybody's like me. So we need to get real with each other. So we trust one another, you know? And I've gotten pretty good at having these group therapy sessions and kind of leading them on my own. Like my favorite thing to do is get somebody to cry in a supervisor meeting, you know? Like once you're bawling, I got you. I know you.
Right.
I know your heart. And that's what I tell people. Like, if you know my heart, you're going to forgive me when I make a mistake. You know, it's so much easier for you to forgive me when you know, hey, that probably wasn't her intention.
Right.
You know? And it goes all across the board, both ways, you know. It's so easy to judge somebody by what you perceive their actions meant, but it's harder to do that when you have a very close relationship with that person, you know. It's much like, you know, I know this officer, I know he, you know, didn't mean to be a jerk on the radio, he must have been stressed.
Because right. I
know, you know.
Yeah, when we have shift supervisor meetings, they're like, do we need tissues?
Maybe.
That's awesome that you guys can be so vulnerable with each other. I think that's really important in an agency, like the trust aspect that you were saying. I know I'm a trainer as well, and we have three different phases, and I typically do phase two, which is 911s and getting in the thick of the work. And the first thing I tell my trainees when they come to me is that it's going to be very difficult. We're going to give you a lot more work than normal to see that you can keep up for when we're really busy. And I say you're probably going to cry. All of us have, including the men in the room, and they kind of just laugh. And I'm like, no, everyone cries here, and I want you to know it's okay. You know, when you cry out of frustration, it lets me know that you want to do this and you're willing to do the work to get there. So, and again, that's all about building this trust too, because I don't want a trainee to cry or like get up and cry and I don't know about it and come back and be frustrated and I don't know about it. And just feel like I can't do this job and eventually quit, you know? So it's the trust and rapport is definitely a huge thing. So that's awesome. That's great.
I think so. I'm sorry. I was just going to say that the trust and, you know, how you're saying you don't want somebody to cry and you not know about it. It's huge because we all have those days,
right? Some
weeks or months, and there are times that, you know, yeah, you carry your partners, mm-hmm. just like yeah. you do out on the floor in leadership, you carry your partner, you know?
Yeah. And you never know what's going on outside of work either.
Right.
You know, what stresses you have that you're kind of just trying to leave at the door the best that you can. And some days you just can't. So yeah, absolutely. Carrying each other is definitely important.
Yeah. We so talk about building trust and those relationships with people, like your first day on the job. We just had four new recruits. And we really tell them, you know, from the get-go, it's really important that you're truthful and honest with us. It's your training and you need to be open and let your trainer know when you're struggling. You know how you learn best. So please let us know what we can do to help you anytime you're struggling. I had one of the new recruits tell me, she's like, you know, because we were talking about us being like a family. And she's like, you know, I don't think I've ever worked at a job where there is genuine kindness amongst coworkers. And she's like, and that's what you guys are. And she's like, it's not fake. And I'm like, no, it's not fake. And we work really hard for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's super important that we can communicate with each other from, you know, frontline employees all the way up to Shannon, because, you know, I tell my people all the time, if Shannon does something that I'm not comfortable with, I can easily go to her and be like, hey, like what you did, that didn't sit right with me. It didn't sit well. And we talk about it. And then, you know, most times it's like, oh, well, that's not what I meant. But, you know, that's where knowing each other's hearts, that's super important, because one of my shift supervisors can easily come to me and say, hey, like, I don't think you really thought this out very well, that decision that you made. And I'm like, oh crap, you're right, I didn't. Like, you know, I get busy and I just start doing stuff. But it's so important, because there's no hard feelings at the end of those conversations. Like, you can just come to me and tell me, you know, I didn't really care for what you did, whatever. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. We apologize and we move forward. So it's really
awesome.
Important. Yeah.
Absolutely. So let's shift focus here a little bit and talk about one of the biggest things that we can do as leaders is acknowledgement. So how do you guys keep morale up? Do you have like rewards and recognition? Let's talk about how we keep that morale high even during stressful times.
You know, rewards and recognition is, that's a hard one, because like I'm a little cheesy. In the beginning, I was like, you know what, guys, we need to recognize people when they do great on a call. So, you know, I'd be like, I'd make all these little cards with candies, you know, like, you're a lifesaver, and give them lifesavers, or, you know, I can't remember. Oh, popcorn, like. I can't remember the thing I did with popcorn. What did I do with popcorn?
I don't remember.
But I had all kinds of like cheesy little things. And it got to where people were overusing them, you know, and then it dilutes the message, and it's like, you know, here it goes again. And then, you know, we've had various things, you know, in the city that we can do for awards, but then it's like, okay, come over here to City Hall to pick out your award. Well, okay, you know, a dispatcher doesn't want to go to City Hall, yeah, unless they have to. And they go right. over there, they go over there the day they're hired and the day they leave, you know.
Yeah.
So it really comes down to honestly just recognizing them, sending out an email like, oh my gosh, they just did this on this shift, it was amazing. You know, we do that, and it's like, it doesn't come from me. I'm not the one sitting out there watching what they're doing. It comes from people on the shift.
Right.
And what's so amazing is when, you know, you get somebody who's like new and they'll send out like a, you know, an attaboy or kudos to a coworker, and they're just like, they're right in there with it. And it's like, yay, they're new and they get it. Like, hey, recognize each other, because the job that they do is amazing.
Yeah.
And I, unfortunately, so many dispatchers forget how amazing their job is, like that they make an impact.
Yeah. Every day.
Like how many people can go home from their job and like, yeah, I saved a life.
You know, today, huh? Right.
You know? And they don't, and a lot of times they don't even feel like, they don't even recognize, or it doesn't register. That's what you did today.
Yeah. So we have a program, it's called Guardian Tracking. And we empower all of our people from frontline all the way up to shift supervisors and even managers and directors. We can input a document for anytime somebody does something great, even if it's an entire shift that just worked a difficult call. It's called like one of them is called a peer recognition form. So you can submit a form and it can go out to all of dispatch. Everybody sees it. Everybody can comment on it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that has been really helpful now towards the end of the year with end of the year evaluations coming up. Basically, all we do is we just search the employee's name and it pulls up all the forms that either they sent out or that they received. So we can, you know, we see all the awesome stuff they did throughout the year. But also we have challenge coins with our patch on one side and our vision statement on the other. Our vision statement is working together as a team and a family, serving others as we would our own. And anytime somebody in our center does something amazing that falls in line with our vision statement, it doesn't have to do with your work. It has to do with you treating each other like family and as a team, working together as a team. We give them challenge points.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that we just ordered, 200 more or mm-hmm. something like that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but... It's just a really great way for, it's different than just an email, or it's different right. from, you know, getting a handwritten card or something like that. And on several of the Facebook dispatch pages, I see, you know, complaints about, oh, we got pizza again or something like that. And it's like, so we try to do something that's unique and not something that they're going to get tired of.
Right. We got to mix it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We also have a committee. They're called the Crew. That does different events throughout the year. And the ideas that they come up with are so fun. And so even just that, like somebody getting to come to work and not have to wear your uniform shirt, you get to wear like a pink shirt during October or something like that. Small things that just make them feel like they're valued and that we care about them. Those are the things mm-hmm. that they want. Like they don't want pizza. They don't want, you know, cookies or whatever.
They wanted breakfast.
Yeah.
We made breakfast for each of the shifts recently. And that was like really well received, you yes. know.
Nice.
They're like, what?
Well, how do you not love breakfast?
Right. Yeah. like, what's this for? Because we appreciate you. That's it. You know,
that's awesome.
Both of the managers and I came in and, you know, made breakfast for everybody.
Yeah. We got her in here at 5 o'clock in the morning, and no, that's not her.
That's not me. Not me. Never did like day shift. But just, you know, little things like that make a difference, you know?
Sure.
Popcorn. We're bursting with appreciation. There, I remembered it. Popcorn, that's what it was.
Nice. So do you guys, what sort of things do you do in the room? Do you have like small competitions or contests, or like, do you guys decorate for the holidays? Like how, if I was to come in at any given time, what might I see there?
There's no telling what you yeah. see in here.
They decorate for everything. It doesn't even have to be a holiday. It's like, oh, it's fall and we've got fall decorations. It's spring. Yeah, they're always decorating. And the thing that's great about it is like, we don't do it. We don't coordinate it. We don't do anything. We come in and it's like, oh, you know, this holiday is over and now this one has begun because everybody decorated.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's not a clean, sterile dispatch center. It's not the one that you want, you know, here, let's show the council the amazing, you know, oh, all the technology. It's like, it's a mess. Yeah. But it's fun. Everybody's scrunched together and we've got stuff hanging from the ceiling and yeah. So we let them pretty much do what they want within reason.
Yeah.
No. We get like the notes from the crew meetings and stuff and has all their suggestions in it. And I'm like, as long as you're not coming to work and like, you know, something really inappropriate.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's do it. You know,
Nice.
But I think they just love the fact that we allow them to do that stuff. And that's something that they came up with, not something that we came up with.
Gotcha.
So it's fun. Mm-hmm. It really is.
So if I remember correct, do you guys have a tree or something on your wall? Was that your agency?
We've
had one. We don't now, but we've had one. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a communication style board up in our center, and everyone's picture is up, and on it, it's like a little bio. It tells if you read it, there's like an interesting fact and like how long I've been here and what my position is, and also what my communication style is. So
That's right. Joe talked about that. I remember that now. Yes.
Yeah. So we do that. Everybody takes a communication style test and it tells us what your communication style is. And that helps with the communication in the room. Like if I'm training somebody, I need to know what their communication style is. That way I can flex my style to theirs. And that way we can better communicate because I'm communicating the way you're going to receive that feedback best, not the way that I would communicate.
Right. That's such a huge thing as a trainer too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I always try to understand their perspective, you know, so I'll ask like strange questions. Like, why did you say that way? Like, what was your thought process behind that? And I think by opening yourself up that way to your trainees is especially important because it lets them know that you value their thought process and you value what they're thinking and that you want to cater to their process so that they're going to be as effective and great as they can be at this job, right. You know, and I think it helps to elevate them to that next level and really demonstrate to them that they're valued here, that their role is important and that we're happy to have them there, you know?
Yes. And just think about that. You do that when you're training somebody. What if everybody put that same kind of effort into just my relationship with the person I've been working with for 5 years?
Sure.
You know, what a difference that makes if somebody feels like they're being heard. I mean, when we talk about the communication styles, that was our most recent kind of leadership development that we did with that consultant. And it was huge for our team. And it's something that we just keep building on and building on. Because, you know, when you understand, hey, Shannon's a driver, don't go into, we're talking about how you feel about everything, you know, give her the facts and show her some progress and she's happy as can be, but Amy's amiable, you know, she's all about, you know, making people feel good. And so I gotta like, make sure when I'm talking to Amy that I'm not driving my point into her because it's going to make her feel like crap, yeah. You know? And it made a huge difference, like with me being a driver talking to an analytical, you know, the relationship with the supervisor was a little bit strained because I'm like, I am talking to her and she is just not giving me anything.
Yeah.
And when I realized, okay, that's because she's processing everything. She's got to think about it before she articulates, you know, what she's going to say, made a huge difference in my communication with her.
Good.
So that's what we try to do with everybody is like, you know, don't think that they're going to respond the way you would respond because they're not you.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. So can we talk a little bit more about the communication style test? What exactly is that? What does it entail? What sort of characteristics do we have that define each one?
Well, it's a super easy test. It's just basically there are four quadrants. You know, there's because the four basic communication styles are driver, amiable, expressive, and analytical. And so it's like just these words that you feel describe you, right? So
okay.
you do the test on your own. And then, you know, I would go to Amy and I, you know, maybe go to a shift supervisor, somebody who I think knows me really well, and hey, do this test for me. That way I'm validating that I'm seeing myself the way other people see me.
And
it's basically, you know, just how many words describe you that are in this quadrant, you know? And I will tell you that all my words were in driver. A lot of my words were in driver. So mine was pretty clear cut.
Yeah. What is driver?
Driver. All my words were driver. So like I said, that was pretty clear cut for me, but
that's her communication style.
Okay. And what sort of words fall under that category?
Oh, like organized, help me. I mean, I can't think of the words, but I know what I am. Okay.
I'm sorry. That's fine. I actually want to, after we're done, we'll talk a little bit. I want to do like a supplement, for this in a blog so that we can sort of embed the podcast in there as well and provide our listeners with some resources that you guys would have if you guys would be interested in that.
Oh yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So we have a communication style test. What in this process that's gone 15 years at this point, what are some things that you found? Oh, let's talk about books, for example. What are some good reading materials that you felt really helped you become better, be better prepared and equipped to be a great leader?
I think the John Maxwell series, they're really short reads, like Mentoring 101, Leadership 101. I think those are great. We actually, there was a time when we were all doing the Mentoring 101 book together, and that kind of helped us get a program off the ground where people were able to mentor new folks in the door, or people who you knew they wanted to promote within the agency. So I really think John Maxwell's her favorite.
I love
her
him.
Favorite.
I love him so much. Also Emotional Intelligence 2.0. Mm. That one was huge, not only for us professionally, but also personally in our home lives. And then Crucial Conversations. We did that together as a team. What else? QBQ, question behind the question. That was good, and it's really short and easy read.
Okay. Nice. What kind of I totally just lost my train of thought because I have so many questions going on right now. I'm gonna regroup here. Do any Kaylee or Janelle, do you have anything that you want to ask or add or anything?
I actually, this is going to be kind of like a broad question, but I love doing this to leaders, especially. Describe your team right now. Describe the team that you have now or in the center that you have right now.
So our leadership team is like, we truly are like a family. We can communicate and have difficult conversations with each other without fear of judgment. We can be completely open and honest with each other, transparent. It's truly, I think, the best team that we've ever had together. Just the mixture of people that we have, everybody is motivated. They all want to do their best. They all want to do the right thing. They are consistent across the board, and they're just great.
Oh, I was going to say that I think the difference, not just on the leadership team, but all of our team members, is the motivation. I mean, these people are really motivated to do the best job they can do. You know, it's so typical that, you know, you go into a dispatch center and they're griping because a citizen called, or they're griping because an officer went on traffic, and it's like, y'all, that's your job. You know,
right. We always hear like, oh my God, the phone's ringing.
It's
no shit. You work at a 911 center.
That's what you signed on for. Well, we don't have that anymore. It's like, people are motivated to do their best. They really, you know, we strive for excellence. Of course, you're never going to get perfection, but we really do. And I think, you know, at all levels in our organization now, it's amazing because we have people promoting from within. Like, yeah. I mean, we have people who are like waiting in line, you know, people are nice. Trying to get me out the door.
Well, that was a pointed look over there.
I will say that over half of our staff is in a leadership position right now. And oh, wow. that is just amazing for us. We have one of our TCOs just recently completed the training program and is out on her own. And she actually taught a CPA class the other day, Citizens Police Academy. And
nice.
We're yeah. like, that's amazing.
She's
like,
brand new.
Yeah.
Brand new to the profession.
No experience.
Yeah. And amazing. Like, she went out there and wanted to talk about how great we are, how great this place is, you know, yeah. and the amazing job that they do. So that's exciting when we're inspiring, you know, because she's a little, mm-hmm. she's young. Yeah. we're inspiring the next generation of leaders. Yes. So that's amazing.
That is awesome.
Yeah,
what other awesome types of community engagement do you guys get involved with?
Oh, we have a open house this weekend, actually, that is, it's called the Public Safety Extravaganza, and we will have a dispatch table set up along with fire, EMS, Public Works. Mm-hmm. Different departments throughout the city, and the public will come and just like visit each table, and we got like 911 supplies, and we ordered like capes and masks because we're going to be like, you know, superheroes.
The heroes under
the nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to give away a lot of stuff, and it's just going to be like an event for the public. Another thing we do is we go out to the schools and talk to them about 911, where I'm on an advisory board for Fort Bend ISD, and we talk about like wanting to implement 911 courses into the schools, into the technical schools.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We try to really get out there and do stuff and let people know what our job really is.
We have people ride out with officers on National Night Out, make sure they're out there, you know, greeting the public as well and talking about what we do.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had some of our dispatchers not too long ago attend some mock interviews with students at one of the schools. They enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah. That's really cool. I think there's a lot to say about community engagement in terms of having the dispatchers involved. I think it adds another layer of appreciation, you know, because some agencies don't do that. You know, their dispatchers just kind of stay hidden and there's no real education out there. And this just adds, you know, we appreciate you. We want to send you out so that people can see what it is that you do and understand how important it is.
Right.
You know, that's really awesome.
Yeah.
So
is always, you know, people don't know about it.
Right.
You're the like unseen person in this whole, you know, chain of events. And so I like to, you know, I like to tell people all the time, you know, police and fire and EMS couldn't do their jobs without us.
Right.
You know? Yeah,
it's funny when I had my interview for my agency. I've been at the same agency for coming on 15 years now, and one of the persons asked me, "What do you know about 911?" And I looked at her, and I'm aging myself here a little bit. I said, "Well, aside from what I've seen on Rescue 911, pretty much nothing."
Oh my gosh,
which was true. You know, yeah. Like everyone knows what 911 is, but nobody knows what 911 is. You right. know, they don't understand when you should call, when you shouldn't call. And that type of community engagement, I think it really goes a long way, you know, because people understand, oh, maybe I shouldn't call to see when my power is going to be back on, you right. know, so stuff like that. So again, it's great that you guys had that involvement, because it's really what we do is nothing, even with the shows that are on now, It gives you a good taste of what it means to be busy and active and take some really horrifying calls. But there's a whole bunch of stuff in the background that, I mean, even our people on the road don't even know that we do, you know? So the education stuff is so important because it just helps us all become on one page and we can all do everything much, much easier. So that's great. So I do have like a three-part question here. In this process that you guys had from point A to point B that's ever evolving and repeating it and doing things over, when did you first notice the positive change in your center? What did that look like and how did you foster it?
For me, I think the first time I noticed a positive change is when the trainers were actually wanting to make sure trainees pass the program. You know, the eating their young mentality was finally going away. I think that was the difference for me. I remember, probably nobody else remembers it, but I remember specifically being in a meeting with supervisors and trainers and talking about how this center, the culture in this center, the excellence of this center was totally up to them. You know, I have so little influence in my office, you know, of what happens out on the floor. Right. I can tell you, I want you to do this. I want you to do this. I want you to do this. But, you know, in the end, it's up to everybody else to make this place what they want it to be. And I remember telling them like, yeah, you make this a place you want it to be. And I honestly think things just started turning around after that.
Good. So how do we continue to foster that then?
Well, really, it's about continuing to empower people and let people do.
Okay.
Don't tie somebody's hands behind their back and not let them do something.
Right.
I don't care what level in the organization, just like we were talking about, our just fresh out of the training program person was down at a Citizens Police Academy because she wanted to.
Yeah.
Where's the rule that, no, you can't do that until you've been here 5 years, or no, you can't do that unless you're, you know, a shift supervisor or a dispatcher too. There's no rule, you know?
Right.
And honestly, by letting people excel in the areas where they want to excel, that makes all the difference in the world.
Of course. Absolutely. So do you guys, how does training look like for you? Like, do you have a lot of people who apply for training like APCO or NENA training or anything like that? And how does that work for you guys in terms of like, do you have a generous budget that allows for a lot of people to go out and seek training? Do you have in-house training?
We have both.
You have both. Okay.
Yeah. We have our training manager is amazing and does like puts together a lot of great in-house training. Amy is amazing. I mean, we have this situational awareness class that they put together and it's great. So we do a lot of in-house, we do in-service training, you know, just, hey, we're rolling out something new. Cause you know, how hard is it to roll out something new in an email? It's very hard, you know? So we do that. We do have a pretty good training budget. We try as much as possible to send people down to we have a Texas Public Safety Conference every year. We try to send people to that. And we have limited funds for like national conferences, but
sure. You know,
we do try to get people out to those. And that one's a hard one because, you know, as a leader in the organization, it's kind of like, I need to go because I need to make sure I'm keeping up on things, but I really want to let other people do it as well. So it's kind of okay, maybe this year we're going to let this person go and okay, now I've got to go.
Of course.
Yeah.
So your in-house training then, is it something that you pull TCs off the floor for? Is it something they can work on their downtime, a mix of both?
Go ahead.
So our in-service training is, we have it quarterly, and we, Larry and I, who's the other manager, we schedule it to where people can come in either an hour early or stay an hour late on the day that they're working. So we have four different in-service training days quarterly, but
we used to do like, okay, come in for 4 hours on your day off and we're going to do this. Well, so COVID made us have to change.
Sure. But
we found out that they really prefer And I'll come in an hour early on a day I'm already working rather than having to come in on my day off. That's, you know, a lot better for them. So again, there you're adapting to what your people need. You know, it's not about our schedules. You know, we're not 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. We adapt our schedules to what they need.
You know? That's awesome. So how did you bring up a good thing, COVID? Well, that's not a good thing, obviously, but I know that it had a big impact on every center virtually. The stress of it when it first started was unavoidable, you know, because we have to worry about it at home. We can't escape it at work. So it's kind of like we're surrounded by the stress of that 24 hours a day. So was your center impacted by that in any way? And how did you work to overcome some of those stresses?
Honestly, our people were amazing during.
Yeah,
they really were. And it's funny because talking with, you know, directors across the city, and I'm just like, yeah, we're good. You know, it's kind of like, okay, this is, I don't know, this is what they trained for their whole career, right? Now,
right.
Extended, so yes, it does wear on you, but overall I think the morale during the whole event was great.
Yeah, the only backlash we had was whenever they had to wear masks, because I mean, of course, you know, taking a phone call back to back for 12 hours with the mask on was extremely uncomfortable. But that's the only time that we ever heard any negative comments about stuff.
They did comment about how every day something changed. You know, of course I'm like, okay, this is the new procedure.
You know? And sometimes that's out of your control though.
Exactly. Yes. And that's like, I expect that, you know, sure. So of course I just joke along with them. Like, you know, for the 300th time, this is, you know, this is the news change. but you know, I mean, we adapt, right? That's
what we do. Yeah. So, were you guys ever separated at any point, or were you all just kind of all stayed in the same space?
We stayed in the same space. We had plans for separating if we needed to, but you know, with our technology that like, that's just like a last resort, because it's it's so much worse to be separated and lose that, you know, connectivity and communication with one another.
Yeah. There's a bunch of context lost. I can confirm that, because we were separated twice.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So we did a lot of our communicating between centers. We did via Microsoft Teams. Mm-hmm. So it's funny what you miss being together, you know, because when you're separated and for example, my agency, we have a backup in center. Center is the one that dispatches the calls. Backup is the backup for center. And then we have our call takers. So if backup and center are in a different building, then, or in a different room or whatever from everybody else, you're not able to hear those context clues that your call takers are providing you, you know, like you're able to gauge the answers to questions that they're asking. A lot of times, like I know if I'm on a hot call, I know that me talking is going to get center the information quicker than me typing. So I'll just sort of like confirm what the call taker is saying, so that center's like, oh, okay, great. I'm going to give this to the deputies. Mm-hmm. But that's lost. I know sometimes I had a tendency to rush. So I would ask questions, and I would try to wait and ask them, when I felt that the call taker had moved on somewhere else. You know, like for like a reckless call, for example, like the first thing that you get is the vehicle description, direction of travel, all of that. So if I see that they moved on to a separate line of questioning, like that now they're solely just updating direction of travel, then I'll sort of chime in with whatever question that I have. And sometimes I would get ahead of myself, which apparently made people mad, but but I didn't realize that I was doing it, you know, because that context was lost. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I can definitely confirm that when you're separated, it's a different beast altogether. So a lot of adaptation.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So much lost. And I just think it really results in a degradation of service to your citizens and responders.
Right.
True. Not just because, hey, we like to be together, but it's true. It does. But we had a separate dispatch center kind of set up over at our airport, ready to go if we needed to. But we never needed to. And that was difficult, honestly. It was just like trying to gauge, okay, you know, how sick are people getting, and, you know, where's, is it going around? And I just, you know, we never got to that point, thankfully. Good. Now, in management, we did get to that point. We were like, okay, we're going to have to, you know, work opposite shifts. And so I was trying to come in early, but we've talked about that.
Hey, I understand. I've been a second shifter almost the entire time, except for 2 years on midnights, and day shift is not in my eyesight ever.
And then having, you know, Amy would come in later. There's four of us in like admin. And so we were trying, okay, two here and two home, you know? And that's hard, you know, just the fact that you're not able to talk with one another to collaborate on things. And, you know, you have something that is so easy. You just, hey, yell a question and okay, now I can go forward on my project. And, you know, you'd just be waiting and holding things. And it just felt like things were in slow motion when we were doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's good that you guys weren't affected that much by it. A lot of other agencies were. I feel like Philadelphia had a big issue with COVID, if I remember correctly, where a lot of their employees were out. So it's good that you guys were able to not have that issue.
Yeah. We had a interlocal agreement with another agency if we ever got to that point where like, okay, if it really gets bad, we need your help taking our calls, or, you know, we'd help them taking their calls, or it never got to that point, luckily.
Good. That's awesome. Yeah. Just a few more questions. We're coming up on an hour here. I hate to go over, but if we do, we do. What have you ever received a compliment or praise from one of your frontline TCs that stuck with you, that let you know that you were doing the right thing, that all of your hard work and effort was paying off, and that you knew that you were on the right path?
Yes. I have one that really sticks with me. We have a TCO that came from the county agency. And when she started here, and like she'd been here for a couple months probably, and she came to me and she was like, "You're the whole reason that I came to this center." Because I had heard such good things about you and your leadership. And I was like, wow, like, that's pretty cool. But we honestly get so many compliments from our frontline people that really reassure us that we're doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. All the time. It doesn't matter who it is. Like people, those guardian tracking forms that we talked about, we get those guardian tracking forms.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
People do them for us. Yeah. And it's just every day something happens that just, you know, lets us know that, yeah, we're on the right path and we're still doing the right thing for our people.
Yeah. And that everything we do matters. Yeah. You know, it may seem very small and insignificant, but it matters.
Sure.
Making an impression, whether we realize it or not. So we have to choose what impression we're going to make, you know. I would say the one of the biggest compliments was not too long ago. We had an agency that needed our help because they were losing people to a new agency that was new, and they were offering, you know, probably, I don't know, good $3-4 an hour more than what this agency was paying. And they didn't know it, but I was working in the background to try to get our folks a raise. I wanted to retain people. I didn't want to lose anybody.
Sure.
And when I called a certain individual and I, you know, I told him what his raise was going to be, he was like, "That's so awesome. I wasn't expecting this. You know, that other city called me and offered me a job." And it would have been higher than what he was making at the time. And he said that, you know, he turned him down, even though it was going to be more money. He said, you know, I really like where I'm working. I really like it, you know. And yeah, turned down, you know, a few dollars an hour because you really like where you're working. That's amazing. Yeah.
That's a huge testament to the awesome leadership that you guys have there.
Right.
And that's amazing.
So I was so happy. I got to turn around and go, well, here, this is your new rate. I was like, yeah, cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, money's great, but peace is so much better. I totally feel that. I've been offered jobs in the past where the money was, you know, greater, but I was just, I'm like, I don't really want to leave this awesome culture, you know? Mm-hmm. So one quick question, because I hear you guys talking about all these people in your agency. And again, you said you have 19 full time.
No, that was 19 was in 2007. We now have 35.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So how was that? Did your population demand that over that time frame, or did you just kind of restructure what you felt was needed?
Well, we did annex, and so we got like 8 new positions with that. But prior to that, I was getting more positions just because I was like, we need them.
Right.
So we were, I think overall, you know, we were adding, you know, we were stair-stepping, like, I need 6 positions. Let's do 2 this year, 2 the next year, and 2 the next year. And that's something a lot of agencies don't get too, right? But you've got to make the case for it. You have to make the case for it that
right.
This is needed. So
how big is your service area?
Our population now is just under 120,000 people.
Okay. And you guys do police and fire and rescue?
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about your hierarchy, because I hear you mentioning all these different roles and all these different people that you have. So you, Shannon, are at the top there, right? Correct. And then describe your breakdown for us.
Okay, so when I started, I was the manager and I reported to a police captain. Now we're our own department in the city.
Okay.
Because, hey, we dispatch for fire and EMS too, right? Why does it make sense that I should report to the police department? Mm. So I was the manager, but now I'm the director. I've got 2 managers. Amy is the operations manager and Larry is the admin manager, which he's training in QA.
Okay.
I have a QA coordinator who does all of the QAs and the one-on-ones. And then we have 6 shift supervisors. And then, excuse me, we added a dispatcher 2 position, and we have 8 dispatcher 2s. They are our training, our CTOs, and they also take a leadership role. And then we have dispatcher 1s. So we have a very nice structure, you know, for it up.
That's awesome. Do you guys have IT built in there too? Or is that coming from the city itself?
It's coming from the city.
Gotcha. Okay.
We could really use our own.
Every dispatch center needs their own IT person.
What's that?
I said every dispatch center needs their own IT person.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Janelle, do you have anything that you would like to add before we close up here?
I was just going to ask, so you mentioned motivation and how important it is to see people in your center motivated. Was there anyone when you came on and started to see that motivation kind of come in that you weren't sure was going to become motivated? And was there any way that you worked with those people to kind of, I don't want to say make them motivated, but help them become more motivated, and you kind of saw the light bulb come on, you know? And how did you get there with any of those people if you did?
So I'll say we had a couple tenured dispatchers that, I mean, had over 20 years of experience. And around the time whenever we developed the committee, the crew that that does all the events and stuff, these people were not the kind of people that would be involved in events and like theme days and stuff like that. They wouldn't have any part in it. So I realized that we were doing the right thing with this committee. When those people started getting involved and actually wanting to participate in all the different activities that we were having. And also that those people were like the people that used to say to about new recruits, like, you know, I'm not going to build a relationship with you until I know you're going to be here for, you know, a while. Those people take our new recruits now under their wing and build relationships with them. And it's just amazing to see that. A 26-year veteran will you know, take a new recruit under their wing and build a relationship with them. That's just great for us to see.
I think also the motivation kind of comes from within, but our job is to engage with people, to engage with them and encourage that. Like if they feel like you don't care about them, they're not going to be motivated to do their best, you know? So I think that's huge, is that I think everyone in here knows that we really care about them. We care about the job they do. We care about them as a person, and we care about, you know, their development. You know, there's been times where I was on somebody's list for some reason and I couldn't figure it out. And I just kept waiting for it to work itself out. And finally I was like, okay, I just need to have a conversation. And why didn't I have the conversation, you know, 8 months before? I should have the conversation. It's engaging people that makes the difference.
Yeah. And when you don't do that, you lose people. And maybe not even in terms of quitting. But I just read something recently about quiet quitting. I'm not sure if you guys heard anything about that, where people, they stay, but they just kind of do just what's required. They pull their 8, 12, whatever hours, and then they're gone. You know, they don't want to do anything extra. And sometimes these were people that were the exact opposite. You know, give me something to do. I want to help. Give me extra. How can I do more? You know, how can I have a bigger impact? And now they're just like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so I think the engagement with that is really important. So that's a good point. Before I forget, because I almost forgot, we have a questions that people submitted. So let me ask those here really quickly. So we had just a short questionnaire. Some people left their names, some people didn't. This first person did not. But they said, we are getting ready to hopefully recruit an internal candidate from dispatching on the floor to being the assistant director. What advice would you give to a new dispatch operations manager? Specifically, how can we boost morale? So I know that we kind of covered this a little bit, but is there anything else that comes to mind in terms of boosting morale?
One of the things that I don't think we mentioned was we allow our people to train with the fire department, the police officers, the SWAT team, emergency management. We get to be involved in like active shooter drills, active violence drills. And that is extremely motivating for our people, whether or not you're a tactical dispatcher or just, you know, frontline personnel. They get to get involved in all that stuff. And that's extremely motivating for them to actually get to see what our field responders do, because it helps them to do their job better. Also during the classroom phase of our training academy, we have the fire department come in, the police department comes in, EMS comes in, they teach a portion of our academy. And that's just motivating for our people, because they don't get to, you know, being in the dispatch center, they don't get to be involved in, you know, stuff with the fire department, police, and EMS, but we make sure that's something that they are a part of. So that's motivating for them for sure.
Sure. Do you guys do, I know for our agency, we do like the ride-alongs when we're in training. Do you guys have that as well?
Yes.
Is that something that you continue to do after the fact, or is that solely just during training?
So we have, whenever we have a stacked shift and there could be an extra person that could go on a ride-along, it's up to the shift supervisor. But they actually did those probably a month ago, they've been having their people go on ride-alongs with fire and police.
Awesome. That's good. I think that's incredibly, incredibly important too. You always need to be, you need to understand the role of the people that you're supporting. And when you're first in training, you don't even know what you're doing, you know? So how can you be expected to understand what anybody else is doing, you know? So that's great that you have that sort of ongoing thing. In terms of roles in your room, do you guys have tactical dispatchers?
We did have tactical dispatchers that were, you know, that was their title. We got away from that. Like because everybody needs to be able to work that situation when it's presented to them.
Sure.
So you can be a tactical dispatcher because it's on your channel, right?
Right.
And then somebody else take the other channel. So I think we were getting to where it was like, okay, I'm the tactical dispatcher, I get to take it. So other people weren't getting the experience working these major events. So we did away with it.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you're on shift and there's not a tactical dispatcher, like you have to be, right. You have to be able to work it. Yeah.
It's all you. Yeah. Godspeed. All right. So the next question. One second. All right, that's the one that I was not able to decipher. So I'll come back to you guys with that afterwards, and then we'll include that in the blog as well. The last question I have. This is a good one. How did you personally find the motivation to keep trying to improve the center without getting burned out or giving up hope? Again, because the process for you, as we talked about, it's long. So it's not a race, you know, it's a marathon. So how do you keep yourself motivated to continue on that path without getting burnt out yourself?
Well, that's where I kind of talked about, you know, carrying each other sometimes is that's what you need in your leadership team. If I'm one thing, I am stubborn, so I will keep trying. Hey, this didn't work. Let me try it from a different angle. So that's just built into me. But do I get discouraged? Yeah. Yeah. I've been discouraged. I've been down. I mean, I always say it's like a roller coaster, or you're at the top of the mountain and then you're not, you know, you can never expect to stay at the top of the mountain. There's always going to be something that, is challenging you, but yeah, I rely on, you know, people like Amy to help me when I'm just, you know, in a shitty mood about things, you know, and I offer the same to them, you know, when they need, you know, somebody to help keep pushing them along, you know, I do the same thing. But right. I think it takes a leader to be vulnerable to.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and be honest and say, man, this really sucks. You know, I'm struggling here. You know, I mean, I'm very open with people in the right setting, you know, when I need to be about stuff like that.
Sure.
And that's gotcha. The good thing about building those relationships with each other, because I can easily go to Shannon, even though she's my boss, I can come to her and be like, I am just so overwhelmed and I'm not motivated. And then she, because I tell her this, she's like, okay, you don't have to go to this meeting then. So I'm like, okay, enough. But yeah, having those relationships with your leadership team, it's so easy to just fall back on them and you don't have to do it on your own. But I will tell you one of the things that I did for myself personally, because I knew I was in a rut and I needed something to motivate me. Was actually something that I needed to hold myself accountable. And it was creating that Facebook page, Leaders Under the Headset. Because I told myself, if I can just wake up in the morning and post every single day, something that I'm just feeling or something that is just on my mind, if I make it a point to do that every single day, I'm holding myself accountable. And then it just like started picking up traction. And I was like, wow, like these people, what I'm posting is like really helping someone else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then, you know, that's actually what I use to get myself motivated. And it worked.
I wish I thought of something like that. I decided to study for my ENP.
So congratulate. When did you get that, by the way? When did you earn that?
Oh, 2018, I think.
2018. So I have my RPL, I did my CMCP, and ENP is next. I just got the study guide in the mail. Holy shit.
Yeah.
what I've heard.
I mean, it motivated me to study, that's for sure.
Oh yeah, I bet. Because yeah. It's like 200 some pages.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. So I haven't had the time to really get into it, but I have it. So I'm happy with that for right now.
That's right.
The goal is to open it at some point.
Yeah.
And join like Tracy's study group and stuff like that. But I know it's very difficult. I know it's very daunting. And I'm very impressed with the people who earn that, because you truly do earn that. Right. So very impressive. Congratulations to you on that. Two more quick questions and we will call it a day. How, and this is sort of in line with what we were just talking about, but how do you specifically practice self-care? What does that look like for you? Uh-oh.
I'm gonna come up
next
something.
Question.
Next question.
So I recently just started like just getting out and walking again. I will say that I was in a big, huge, awful slump for the past few years, but just like I have an accountability partner in one of my dispatchers. And when she's here, on the days that she's here, she gets me out whenever it's her break time and we go walk. And like when I'm out there, I'm like, man, why don't I do this more often? Like it's so, it just clears your mind, right? And just gives you a breath of fresh air. But all of the leadership stuff that I have been doing has helped to motivate me. And that I like that kind of stuff. Like one of the meetings that we talked about with the leadership facilitator, I remember when we got this big leadership book and I was so like, I was nerding out. I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. This is like right up my alley.
Like writing assignments. She loves that stuff.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I was like, this is so cool. I'm so motivated. But yeah, well, I need to do better at self-care. I think we can all do better in that area. Yeah. Especially because our jobs are so stressful. It's really difficult to, like when we're at work, we're on high alert all the time, right?
Right.
And when we go home, it's like, okay, I don't want to be on high alert anymore. I want to just sit down and relax. And I need to do more of, you know, you need to get out there and do something for yourself.
Sure.
I do take Fridays off. Thanks to my boss here.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's awesome.
I can say all the right things, but you know, I know all the right things to say. I know all the right things to do, but do I do them all the time? No.
Sure.
No.
I think it's all relative too. Like Amy, you have the leadership page, which I think does provide you with some self-care. So I wouldn't discount that so much in terms of finding things that you need to do to make yourself feel better. Because if that makes you feel better, then that's self-care,
right?
You know? So I'm sorry, Shannon, didn't mean to interject there.
No, it's okay. I mean, I would like to say, well, I practice yoga and I exercise and I eat right, but I do that intermittently. Honestly, I mean, the thing that helps me is I have dogs.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I go home and no matter what kind of day I've had, I have dogs happy to see me.
Yes, they are.
Petting a dog is therapeutic, and that's what I do.
I agree. That's awesome. How many dogs do you have?
Two.
Okay. What kind?
English bulldogs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. That's awesome. Okay. So last question, advice. What is one piece of advice that stuck with you that you would like to share with somebody else?
Shannon gave me a piece of advice long time ago that has always stuck with me. Anytime I hear someone who has been promoted to a new position and they're just getting shit from the people, because when I started here, I just felt like people were trying to trip me up. I felt like people were trying to get me to make mistakes. And she told me, she's like, you know what, in a few years these people are not going to be here, and when people come in the door that are brand new, they're only going to know you as being in a leadership position. They're going to respect you. They're going to respect your decisions. They're going to trust you. So like holding on to that and knowing like there is going to be a time in my career when people respect the position that I'm in, you just have to keep going. because eventually it will get easier. So that has stuck with me since she said that to me.
Yeah, I think for me, it was about kind of emotional intelligence and meeting people where they are and not holding grudges and not holding things against people. I think that was really good advice from a boss that I had.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, ladies. It was a pleasure talking to you. I look forward to our chats later to get the resources available to everyone as well. I'm glad that we took the time to do this. I know it took a while for it to happen, so I'm grateful for everyone's patience. Hi, Kaylee. She had her little baby wake up. But thank you again for joining us. I hope that we can do this again sometime. Maybe we can break something down further and just talk about one specific topic for an hour. And just let people know how specifically you guys are so amazing. So again, thank you so much, everyone. Check out our website, www.humanize911.com. We have our podcast, our blog, our store, etc. Thank you so much, ladies, for joining us, and we'll see everyone next time.
Thank you. Bye.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.